one of the greatest honors of my life has been in academia, helping teach, mentor, and coach the next generation of criminal justice professionals. My next guest you're going to love. His name is Dr. Michael Pataro. He is a visionary criminal justice educator committed to academic achievement and creating a well-rounded educational environment. He currently is full-time faculty at the American Military University, again, teaching the next generation of the brave men and women who will protect you. Dr. Michael Pataro, next on the Criminal Justice Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the top-ranked Criminal Justice Evolution podcast, CJ Evolution. Top-ranked because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much for tuning into the program. If you would take a moment and give us that 5-star rating on Apple Podcast, we sure would appreciate it. And reach out to me. I would love to hear from you at cjevolution.com. I promise I will return your message. I promise. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field. Whatever you were doing, wherever you were at, remember this: in this challenging environment, you are still honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Folks, I believe deep in my heart that the vast majority of people out there, Americans in this great country, support you. Don't believe all the crap that you see on the news and on social media. People love you. Please take care of yourselves, take care of your brothers and sisters, and above all, take care of your family and serve your communities and come home safe. You know, approximately 39% of first responders suffer from depression, PTSD, anxiety, suicidal ideation, addiction issues, or all of it together. That is a huge number, folks, and that's what we know. I think that statistic is underreported, that it's much higher. There is help out there for you or somebody you know, and that is FHE Health, specifically the Shatterproof Program for First Responders. This program is the only one of its kind in the country, offering many services and treatment for our first responders. Neurofeedback, neurostimulation, yoga, breathwork, everything within the program. This is the same program that I attended last year, and I highly recommend it. FHE Health is a Florida-based healthcare institution that delivers quality, medically integrated, personalized treatment from those suffering from behavioral health disorders. They specialize in addictive disorders and other behavioral health diagnoses, such as mood disorders, depression, anxiety, and trauma-induced disorders. This was a game changer for me, folks. This program saved my life, and it can save your life or somebody you know that needs treatment. Please reach out to FHE Health, specifically the Shatterproof Program for First Responders, or you can contact me directly, 303-960-9819. Let's get you on the road to your recovery. On to Michael Pataro on the CJ Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I'm very excited to have my next guest on the show, Dr. Mike Pataro. He is an educator. He is doing so much for the next generation of law enforcement. He's an author. He has over 150 publications out there, and he is certified in suicide prevention. Just this guy does it all, and I'm so happy to have him on the show. Mike, how you doing, buddy? Thank you for being here. I didn't butcher your name, right, Pataro?
You didn't. Said it perfectly. Great pronunciation. My parents would be proud of you.
Well, I appreciate you being here, Mike. And, you know, for those people out there who don't know who you are, I know you're very popular in the academic world. You're doing a lot of stuff, a lot of publications. Tell the listeners, sir, who are you?
My name is Mike Pataro. I spent, I would say, the first half of my professional career working in the criminal justice field, mostly within corrections administration. I moved on to become executive director of a drug and alcohol outpatient facility, then a crime prevention agency. Mm-hmm. I had been teaching part-time since 2002. I think for me, it was an outlet because, you know, criminal justice can be negative at times, and no. I needed something more positive in my life. And I enjoyed it. It was, you know, it wasn't for the money. I think I just enjoyed the experience. But right around 2010, I was like, I had, I think, 22, 23 years in at that point. And I'm like, you know, I think I'm going to jump ship and switch careers, but in a different way, because the great thing about academics is that I can, I shouldn't say and do a lot of things, but I can kind of take on those controversial subjects, those mm-hmm. sensitive topics without fear of reprisal. That's one of the good things about it. So I wanted to pay back, I guess, and move the system forward by trying to address a lot of these issues that, you know, we've been talking about since I was younger and still haven't been addressed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been teaching for a while too, Mike, like I told you before we started. And a lot of issues out there that the system is dealing with right now. And it's interesting. I don't know if you do it, sir, where, you know, when I teach, because I've been teaching for a little over a decade, I haven't taught the last couple semesters, but I would go around the room and ask people what they want to do.
Yeah.
And very few of them say, I want to be a police officer. And the ones that do, they want to jump right into detective work. And I'm like, yeah. No, you can't really do that way.
Yeah, there's steps.
Yeah. There's steps. But you were in corrections, which was a whole different beast. And like I told you before, you know, off the air, I really admire people like you because I couldn't do it, man. I mean, it takes a special type of person to work in corrections because, as you know, and obviously the listeners know, I mean, your communication is key. And I could definitely tell the difference between road deputies where I was at who spent time in corrections and the one that didn't because they were very, very good communicators. And you have to be in that environment.
Yeah. And it's a skill that I brought with me into the classroom too. So, I mean, it's definitely something that served me well during that time period. And it's actually something I also stress in the classroom too, mm-hmm. you know, about the use of their communication skills. You know, I'm like, hey, you're listening. You're going to be dealing with the bad guys. You're going to be dealing with victims, coworkers, judges, attorneys. You got to be able to kind of adjust, you know, to the person that you're working with. And, you know, I always dispel a lot of the myths on TV and movies like, you know, no, you really should talk your way out of these problems. You exactly. don't want to escalate a situation. So I focus a lot on de-escalation skills, emotional intelligence, and trying to, you know, maintain your cool so that you don't end up on some CNN or Fox News at night with somebody that has a video of you.
Yeah, because I imagine you've seen you know, some pretty tense moments, obviously in the correctional. You were in the prisons, right, Mike?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And now I imagine you saw fights and all kinds of other crazy stuff going on.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it brought along a lot of stories into the classroom.
Yeah.
So yeah, lots of crazy stories, you know, but again, I'm one of those people that even with a negative experience, I try to take something positive away from it. So, you know, all that experience that occurred over 22 years, I was able to bring into the classroom. And I think it helps the lectures because I'm not that, you know, traditional PhD straight out of college without any real life experience. I'm telling you, this is what happens. And here is an example.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think the students like that. And I tell them the crazy stories too, you know, that may not have been funny at the time, funny now, you know, may not have been, you know, as, you know, laid back as it is now, but, you know, I go through everything and, you know, how I handled it, how I suggest handling it. So I think it's a good experience.
Yeah. And that's, you made a good point. And I'm not trying to knock academia because I mean, I'm a big believer in education, but when you have somebody like you who has that real world mm-hmm. experience coming into, you know, the academic world, and then coupled with your education as a PhD, I mean, I think that brings more credibility, I think, in a lot of ways. I'm not knocking people who don't, and are not in the criminal justice field who get into academia, but I think that brings a level of credibility. This guy's been there, he's done that. And I teach kind of the same way, Mike. I don't sit here and tell war stories all the time because, you know mm-hmm. kids are, they want to hear all the, you ever shoot anybody?
Yeah.
You know, no, I just, you know, try to mix it in where it's applicable. And I think that's makes for a good learning experience.
Absolutely. I mean, I had professors for my undergraduate, loved them, stayed in contact with them, but unfortunately they didn't have this experience. So mm-hmm. I think that kind of provided a disservice when I entered the field, because a lot of it was learning on the job, you know, testifying in court, you know, taking a witness stand, taking a deposition, you know, things that I can at least elaborate on that I had to learn on my own through, you know, trial and error, you know. And told him about my first time on the stand and how this defense attorney, I wanted to hurt her. And she made me cry. Like, she was so brutal. I'm like, what? You didn't have to be that brutal. But we ended up being friends and everything after that. Now she's a judge. But, you know, just that experience there alone, that I wish somebody would have given me a little bit of a heads up on how to handle these questions.
Well, it says one of those things, man, you got to, I mean, I went through the same thing where it's just, you got to do it, go through it. And it's always interesting to me how the defense attorneys would come up, shake your hand before, and then you get on the stand and then they're brutal. They're just eviscerating you on the stand. Exactly. But that, as you know, that just comes with experience and everything like that. And you know, you learn as you go. You've been teaching for a long time, got a lot of experience. You see what's going on in the criminal justice field. And we were talking a little bit beforehand, Mike. I mean, I'm with you, man. There's a lot of areas where we need help and we need reform. But what do you see? And I know this is a broad question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. A couple of the more pressing issues that we need to address, we need to really get a handle on, take some action with the criminal justice field.
Oh, definitely. I think the two that just popped into my head as you were asking the question, one is police reform. You know, and I'm not talking about defunding the police or anything to me extreme like that. But rather just, you know, addressing the issues that we've been talking about for decades that just still need to be addressed. But let's move forward. We need to establish better police community relations. And, you know, the elephant's in the room. We see it. We got to move forward. We can't keep hiding this and not talking about it. But I address this in my book in that we got to just work on going back to the old school, the soft skills, you know, communication skills. Maintaining control of your emotions, you know, not taking things personally, all the basics really kind of get back to that to kind of quell a lot of these situations before they do escalate.
Granted,
because there's always going to be somebody that's going to go, well, and I get that. There are situations that, you aren't going to be able to be successful in those, you know, trying to negotiate and trying to talk the situation down. But I think for the most part, you do. And like you said, my background in corrections, you know, we had to use our words. You know, that was our initial weapon at first, was trying to use our words, trying to quell the situation. Because in a prison, your worst fear is that it's just not between you and that prisoner, but then all the other people that are around. So this can go sideways pretty quickly. So you're looking out for yourself, but you're also looking out for your entire, you know, team as well, that this can go really bad and you're outnumbered significantly. So I think that was a good experience though for me, because I've learned how to kind of quell the situation to the point where I was never dishonest though. You know, like I remember this one guy, it was all like destroyed his cell and things of that nature, but telling him, you're going to be charged for that. You know, I'm not going to lie. However, we need you to, you know, get cuffed up. You're going to go to solitary. But if you don't, then, you know, we're going to come in. Somebody gets hurt. You might get additional charges. You know, once it clicks in, for the most part, you can kind of get someone to calm down then and realize that you're not in a good situation, that you want to end it right here.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, and you hit a couple areas where I just want to elaborate on. I mean, in my 23 years in law enforcement, most of the time, I would say 90 something percent of the time, you hit on it, Mike, we have time on our side. You know, we have time on our side. Very few. And again, this is just my experience. I'm not talking for every cop out there. Or correctional officer. Most of the time we have time on our hands, which means that we can kind of talk our way through it. And the best feeling I ever had, I know it sounds weird, is talking somebody into a pair of handcuffs. You know, that's the best thing in the world, because it's beneficial to them. It's beneficial to me and the agency, because we're not using any type of force. I think it's a culture thing. Again, when I retired, I was up in the higher echelons in rank. And I think it's a culture thing. Some departments are really good at it. And I talk to a lot of cops from around the country. I think some departments suck at it, for lack of a better word. They need a lot of help. And the problem is that, you know, trying to break through that individual, because every department, as you know, Mike, kind of like every institution or prison, has its own culture, I imagine. And it's trying to permeate that and get through that to to kind of change things. But I agree 100%. We can't keep going down this path. We can, but we need some good reform, and it's going to be trial and error. I think, you know, we'll stick with what works and then get rid of what doesn't work, but we can't keep going the same way we have been.
Oh no, absolutely. And I think the other glaring issue is probably just the disparity in sentencing. You know, we have to acknowledge that, you know, the system can be somewhat biased, maybe not
exactly
purposely, but there is bias. I mean, it's not just racial bias, there's gender bias and socioeconomic bias. The stats show it, prove it. So it's, you know, that has to be addressed as well. I think we need to kind of just address these reforms, but it's not necessarily, I don't want to say it's not easy per se, but it's doable. You know, it is definitely doable without necessarily restructuring departments or institutions. I think we just got to get back to some of those basic skills. And I think that will really help things.
And I don't think, you know, we did law enforcement or corrections or the criminal justice field can't be the only ones at that table, in my opinion. I mean, there has to be other stakeholders in there, i.e. the community, you know, and other stakeholders to be at that table too, to come up with some solutions, because as you know, criminal justice, we can't do it alone.
Right.
You know, we need other people at that table, you know, to get more ideas and more solutions to some of the problems. And I think we're a lot better than when you and I probably started in criminal justice. I think we've come a long way, but I think we have a long way to go. And it was interesting. We were talking beforehand about, and I think I don't think I mentioned this before on air, but you know, how there's so many young people out there that don't want to be cops anymore. And I don't know if you're seeing the same thing where you're at, where they all want to get into the FBI or be, you know, profilers, or which is fine, but you just don't see people wanting to become cops anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, unfortunately, you're seeing a little bit of that. I mean, I'm seeing a little bit of that, but not necessarily, that's not necessarily the entire picture. I think that people realizing that they're not going to be that person that's going to be, you know, on a viral video. So that looking at it, that was the exception. That's not me. That's not something I would do, which I think is a good experience. You know, I try to introduce those videos into the classrooms, whether it's corrections, whether it's law enforcement, we talk about it, you know, we talk openly about it intellectually, something you can't do on social media anymore. You know, it turns out into this, you know, big pitted fight. But, you know, we have good conversations that, you know, we realize what needs to be reformed and we need to go forward with it. And a lot of these programs are in place or could be in place. We just got to take those action steps. The criminal justice system is very notorious for talking about things, but not necessarily acting on those things.
Absolutely. That,
my three decades, that's probably my biggest complaint, is that, you know, we know all this stuff, we've known it, but why aren't we fixing it? We just keep talking about it. Like, let's
kick the can down the road, you know.
Exactly. Admit it, we got a problem, let's fix the problem.
Yeah, exactly. Now, where do you teach again, Mike? Tell the listeners where you teach.
Sure. I teach with American Military University. I'm associate professor of criminal justice there.
And you've been with them for how long?
It's going on 11, 12 years now.
Nice.
Yeah. It's a great institution. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a lot of friends that went there and they had nothing but good things to say about it. Let's kind of navigate into your, you have a ton of publications out there, but I want to center around your book, Pursuing and Navigating a Career in Criminal Justice. Now, again, you don't have to give away the farm, but I think we kind of hit on some issues that you might talk about in the book. But what was the catalyst? What made you put pen to paper and really, you know, come out with this book? Because I think it's a great book and I think it's needed out there, because it is a difficult environment right now. It's always been a difficult environment. And criminal justice, as you know, Mike, and the listeners, I'm not just talking about cops. I'm talking about dispatchers, fire, EMS, correctional officers. That all falls under the CJ umbrella. So what made you write the book?
Wow. I've been wanting to write this book for at least a decade. You know, it's things I bring into the classroom, and I just wanted to kind of put it to paper.
Yeah.
And why I titled it Pursuing and Navigating a Career in Criminal Justice, because I wanted to appeal to high school kids who might be interested, college kids who are undecided, but also your seasoned veterans, because it kind of, like, the first part of the book, the first half of the book, I would say, is kind of geared towards the beginning. those that are considering a career. But the second half of the book addresses the issues that you and I know about, but some may not know about, and that's PTSD, depression, anxiety, sleepless nights, and, you know, self-medicating with drugs or alcohol or over-the-counter prescription medication, high suicide rates, high divorce rates, you know, like things that, you know, many don't realize how prevalent it is in our profession. And that's what I wanted to kind of bring to their attention. But then I would say towards the end of the book, it's more or less, okay, here's the problem, but here are the solutions. Because nobody wants a book with just like,
I want solutions.
I want solutions. So it's about healthy eating, about physical activity, physical exercise. It's about having balance in your life by having other positive, socially appropriate outlets, you know, that you can't get absorbed into this being your entire life. There is a life outside of your career, and you have to make sure that you know that. Spend time with your kids, spend time with your spouse, you know, spend time with your friends. You know, and I'm a yes person. That's one of my things. And I had to back off. That was something I had to learn, is that
I can
say no.
Yes,
and then I'd be stressed. So I'm like, okay, this is ridiculous. You know, things of that nature. But as we talked about earlier, suicide is definitely an area that I'm familiar with. You know, I experience depression, the deepest, darkest depression I ever experienced in my life. Very scary place to be. Felt very alone. Was very reluctant to come forward, mainly because I felt that I would be judged as being weak or vulnerable. You know, so I got, my pride got in the way. So that's one of the things I advise in the book is, you know, don't let your pride get in your way. And I think that's a problem for a lot of us, because we consider ourselves to be a little bit above on the upper echelon. And so we don't want to admit those vulnerabilities. We got into this, so, you know, we should have expected it.
Yeah.
But really, we didn't expect a lot of the things that we encounter. We need to learn how to cope with them. So it's coping, resiliency skills. You know, like I said, eating better, especially in corrections, it becomes very sedentary. A lot of the guys I work with gained a lot of weight. That leads to a lot of health problems, especially as we get older. You know, so trying to ward off these things before they become problematic. So it's it's more of like a preventative type of approach, using humor.
I mean, I have to bring that in.
You gotta have a sense of humor. Sometimes I would say most of us have a warped sense of humor, but still a sense of humor. And it's good for you. You gotta be able to kind of cope. And if coping with a tragedy or something tragic is through humor, by means, you know, go with it. You know, talk with your spouse or talk, you know, with people that you feel comfortable with. A lot of times we don't wanna talk to people outside of our work environment, thinking we're going to burden them or they may not understand. Another one is that we become very distrustful of others. So, you know, learning how to kind of let go, I guess you could say, of some of that control that you have and being able to talk to other people. So it's kind of like, okay, here's getting into the field. Now you're in the field. Holy crap, there are some problems now, challenges ahead. And now what do you do to deal with those challenges? Yeah. So it was actually tough, but I condensed it to 14 chapters, but they're very concise, very succinct. There's no extra stuff in there. You know, this is just really, and it's based on my experience. It's based on interviews with others, which I quoted in there. And then of course, the researcher in me, it's based on statistics and research. So it's not just a Mike Pitero book. It's based on, you know, National Institute of Justice and what all these professional agencies are saying. So it validates what you and I know, but a lot of individuals in our profession don't know.
Yeah, I love it, Mike. Where can people pick up that book, brother?
It's on Amazon, or you can go directly through the publisher, which is Kendall Hunt Publishing, or you can simply Google it, Pursuing and Navigating a Career in Criminal Justice, and it should pop up.
Yeah, and everything of this is going to be linked up in the show notes of the listeners.
Oh, thank you.
And I love everything you just said, Mike, and I really like the book. I haven't read it yet, but I will. About you're just not giving how to pass an oral board and all this other stuff. I love it all, but I really like what you said about the mental health component, physically, mentally, because that is, as you know, and the listeners probably know, and if you don't, you need to pay attention to this. I mean, it is so important. This is one of the things that I know I didn't learn you know, when I was a young cop. As a matter of fact, I think we should be doing more in the academies from a law enforcement perspective, getting more training and getting more awareness and action behind at the beginning of somebody's career rather than deal with it. And again, I'm just to preface, I should have prefaced by saying that doesn't mean because you get into criminal justice, you're going to be suffering mentally or physically, because some people don't, but the vast majority, as you know, Mike, do. And it takes a long time to fester, at least for me. And I went through those dark periods, brother, like I was telling you. Yep. And it's not a good place to be. I never in a million years thought I would find myself in a position where I was like, I'm going to hurt myself.
And
it's just not a good place to be. And it's bad. So for the listeners out there, grab Mike's book, listen to this, share this show. And I mean, it's just such good information and such, it's so needed in what we're doing in criminal justice. Now, I'm sure you get it, Mike. What advice, if I'm you and I'm one of your students, I come up and I say, hey, Dr. Patero, I want some advice. You know, what advice would you give me about entering the criminal justice field? And I'm sure it's probably in your book, but can you tell me?
Absolutely.
Hey, fireman.
Well, I mean, going back to the earlier conversation about, you know, the college courses, when I was an undergraduate, most of the courses, it presented all the positives, you know, but I think it's doing kids a disservice. So I talk about, I wouldn't say the negatives, but the challenges that are there. So, you know, I want people to go into this profession knowing that these issues exist. It's not just all unicorns and rainbows. You know, there's going to be some issues, but here's how you can survive it. Mm-hmm. So it's, I go through everything, the background investigation, the polygraph, things to prepare, like having all your documents together. I mean, I pretty much believe I covered every aspect that you could possibly imagine. Interviewing judges, interviewing police officers, corrections officers, I mean, you name it. And it's people that, have been there, done that. So people in administrative positions, here's what they would advise when you go to an oral interview, you know, things of that nature. So I would just tried, and failed quite often. So, and I guess this is kind of like a pay it forward type of book I didn't want people to experience what I had to, why reinvent the wheel when the wheel's already invented for you. So here, take it and run. So it's very practical. And I'm not just saying it because I wrote it. It's kind of, I consider it my baby in a sense, because it's probably one of the most valuable to me personally because of all the information in there is designed to save a life for one, and to prevent, some of us from going down that rabbit hole with the drinking and the self-medicating. And sometimes you don't know that, this is the way you're handling the problem. You know, you going out drinking every night, or going home, more likely going home and drinking every night. And you don't realize that, hey, you might have a problem here, and this is how you're coping, and that's totally not healthy. And trying to look inward at yourself, do some self-reflection and realize I need to get help. Yeah. And it's okay. You're not alone. There's literally so many of us, and I have people chiming in that have been through the same experiences as you and I. And I think when you hear from others who have been there, done that, it's more credible. It's, it has more merit to it than if, say I was a psychologist and I just read and researched about this. I think because when you have someone who's been in that position, you can relate to other people and they can relate to you.
Yeah. Excellent. And I tell people sometimes, Mike, and sometimes they don't like what I'm telling them, but, or if they ask me my opinion, I say, look, no, nobody is going to come and swoop in and save you. They might be there for you with support and stuff like that, but nobody's going to save you. You have to save yourself first. Yep. You know? And that means reaching out and asking for that help. And I like telling people, and you probably know this, Mike, I mean, life's a miracle. I mean, we're really statistically, when you look at the chances of us being born, I think there's a stat out there. I heard a couple of years ago, like a 400 trillion to one. That's the statistical probability of you being born. Right. So that's not going to take away all your problems. But when you really start thinking about that, I know it was like an aha moment for me where I was like, holy crap. We might have bad days, and everybody has bad days, but it's really a miracle that we're here. So if you're suffering out there, you need to reach out and ask for help. And And I like what you said, Mike. I mean, we've always known about a lot of the problems in law enforcement and corrections and criminal justice, but we just keep kicking the can down the road. We were, all right, well, somebody else will deal with it, or it's not my problem. And it's just a culture thing, I think, in a lot of places.
It is. And that's where administration comes into play.
Exactly.
So I've also published and presented quite a bit on leadership, because I think that leadership is, you know, it's that's where it needs to be, you know, discussed and implemented. And like you said, not a once and done, you know, 2 hour mm-hmm. training. This has to be weaved in from the beginning and continuously weaved in.
Yeah.
That's another frustrating thing, is something important like mental health. You know, you have a one presentation for 30 minutes and you're like, you're good, you know, yeah. And
sign off right here.
That's not good. you need to constantly kind of reinforce it. And, you know, if you have, you know, some type of incident that's very tragic or traumatic, you need to assume that maybe they're not coping with it well, yeah. Or maybe, you know, you can't make the assumption they seem okay, because you, as you know, this could come and creep in later on.
Yeah.
So I think administration has to take a look at themselves, because they are mostly responsible for establishing that culture and
exactly.
changing that culture.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not afraid to admit that one of the reasons I put in the book too, that I left corrections though, is because of all that closed-mindedness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the response to anybody who expressed any like vulnerability or expressed what they perceived to be vulnerability was met with, well, you can go look for another job elsewhere if you can't handle this one.
Yeah.
Worst thing you could possibly say to someone. So, I mean, that came from leadership. So, you know, it's one of those things that I took away with me when I left corrections, said, I don't ever want to be that guy, whether it's teaching or if I go back into the field, that you can't dismiss people like that, you know, and that's just wrong. And then, you know, so administration needs to change.
I agree, you know, 100%. I mean, it starts from the top down. Now, having said that, I think anybody can affect change. You don't have to have rank to be a leader in mm-hmm. an organization. But I agree with you 100%. And then, like I said, I really do believe, Mike, that things are changing. Again, I was fortunate in my two agencies I worked for in my career that they were, not that things were perfect, but they were pretty big proponents and they were more actively involved with the mental health and physical well-being aspect of it. But I agree with you. The last thing you want to tell is somebody, oh, go look for another job, especially now. Mm-hmm. It's more expensive to recruit and stuff like that. Why don't you just keep the people you have and help them?
Exactly. I'm a big, I'm not sure if you're familiar with, or if your listeners are familiar with transformational leadership practices.
Oh, yeah.
It's my favorite. That's the approach that I've always taken. It's the approach that I continue to take.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of like it because it's that coaching, mentoring type of mentality, you know, and I really think that's more effective. And, you know, the research has shown it is more effective.
Well, I mean, the whole job as me a leader, and this is my philosophy, or was, I was a leader, but I was training the next generation to take my spot.
Right.
You know, because I'm not going to be there forever. I know some leaders out there think, well, I'm never going to go. And you're going to go somewhere.
Right.
You know, you're going to leave one day, whether you like it or not. So who are you, you know, what legacy are you leaving? What are you teaching to your subordinates?
Exactly. I just think, you know, that approach has so many positives compared to negatives that, you know, I just think it makes you more accessible, you know, you're more approachable and you're more available. And I think that's key, you know, and taking a vested interest in your people, you know.
Yes.
You know, how was your day yesterday? What's going on? You know, how's everything with the house? You were having trouble, I heard, you know, like get more involved, you know, but unfortunately I could only speak for corrections, but you know, we have a tendency of wardens and directors of corrections to kind of stay in their office all day and never really interact with anyone, except on paper, you know, through memos coming down. But other than that, you don't see them. They don't take a vested interest. And then people feel like they don't have value to the institution input.
One of the most irritating things I ever saw is you get two people in offices right next to each other and they're sending emails to each other. Instead of just getting up and walking next door and have a conversation. Now, I know, as you know, something needs to be an email, needs to be documented. But, you know, you can't, nothing I don't think is ever going to take place of that face-to-face interpersonal communication, which is so important.
Exactly.
Mike Pataro, thank you. Dr. Mike Pataro. Very good author, educator of many years. Check out his book, 2021 book, Pursuing and Navigating a Career in Criminal Justice. Brother, it has been an honor having you on the show. Anything we can do to help you, sir, please reach out to me. Thank you for being here. It truly was an honor, sir.
Thank you, Patrick. I really appreciate it. This was a great opportunity. A pleasure meeting you. And if the opposite, if there's anything I could ever do for you or any of the listeners, please reach out.
All right. Thank you, brother. Take care.
All right. Thanks. Have a good one.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.